With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Rick Mund.
The little rascal has spirit.
On TNT Radio.
Okay, there's a story, I'm not going to lie, it's affected me, that I've seen over the last few days, and it's not about war, and it's not about vaccine injuries, and so on and so forth. It's about trees. And old Darren Denslow himself and Danny Bamping, who was on the show this week from Plymouth, highlighted this, and it seems to have really caught a lot of people's heartstrings about cutting down of trees in a place called Armada Way in Plymouth. Now, if you don't know the story, you might be thinking, so what? Trees get cut down everywhere. And I know that. I never shed any tears over the Amazon being, you know, strip mined in the past and, you know, all this. But for some reason, at this point in time, right now, this business is grieving me about what's happening in Plymouth. So overnight, I suppose it's the way that it's been done also. By cover of night, a crew went into Plymouth City Centre with chainsaws, sectioned off a large area and started lopping down old trees that I believe, and Darren can correct me if I'm wrong here, I think they were planted after the last war. They were symbolism of regeneration and growth. They've been there for decades upon decades upon decades, but they're all being chopped down. The public went banzai. Injunctions were sought against Plymouth Council. The injunction was granted. But the problem is that of around 150 trees, around 120 to 130 had already been chopped down by the time the injunction was served. So even though they stopped the carnage, the damage had already been done. And if you've ever cut a tree down before, you can't just pick that thing up and set it back on the stump again. It doesn't work like that. It takes decades for it to regrow again. So if people are up in arms, people are asking questions why. People are starting to say, this is happening in my town. This is happening in my neighborhood. I had a very good friend. In fact, I was going to send you this, Darren, yesterday. He put a post up recently. He was got it. He lives in an apartment. He's a humongous old tree there. It's been there for like 100 odd years. He took a lot of peace and solace from it, watching it through the seasons. The council came out, said, we're cutting it down. It allegedly, it's dangerous. It wasn't dangerous. It wasn't rotten. They say it's to help surveillance, or people are saying it might be to help surveillance. You can't hide behind them, or it's blocking 5G broadcasting. I don't know the exact reason. I wouldn't rule that out at all. Not at all. But one thing I do know is people are grieved about the loss of these trees. And I'm trying to figure out why. Why is this such a emotive subject now, all of a sudden, trees? And you know what? My humble opinion is, I think we know we've been shafted so badly, mentally, physically, spiritually, financially, and emotionally over the last few years, that this return to the old normal, I don't think it's ever coming. I don't think we're ever going to go back to the way things used to be. So much damage is done. So when we look at our environment, right, the streets that we walk on, the parks that we grew up in, the trees that we maybe climbed and played in and got horse chick conkers from during the autumn time, I don't know. When they start chopping them down as well, it's almost like we're going to erase not just your future, but we're also trying to take away the fond memories that you would have had from your past. I'm going to pause there and then I'm going to talk to Darren because he's very involved in this too. And we'll have other stuff to talk about too, but I want to talk about this. So we're going to take a nanosecond pause and we'll be right back here on TNT Radio.
Your news, local and abroad.
It's the news from home and from overseas.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Darren, off the cuff, Plymouth Herald. I'm looking at a story, Plymouth Herald. Plymouth is traumatized and in mourning over these felled trees. I'm not going to go that far. I'm not going to say I'm traumatized or mourning, but I am sad, my friend, when I saw them pictures you put up of all them trees, and now they've slapped bicycle racks down beside them, these cool steel bicycle racks. I don't know if you've seen that picture or not, beside the felled trees. That, to me, is a horrible picture. It's a horrible picture.
Yeah. Oh, look, we've put some bicycle racks in place for climate change, but we've cut down all these trees. They actually, I believe, from conversations I had last night, they cut down 123 trees before the injunction by Straw Plymouth. You can follow Straw Plymouth at Straw Plymouth on Twitter. They have a fundraiser for their legal campaign that they're trying to get in place. They've got the injunction in place. They're now looking to try and take Plymouth City Council to court. And it's not just the fact that they cut down these trees that have been there for decades, an urban forest of hundreds of trees that ran through the city centre. It was an area, especially in the summer, where people would sit and drink their coffee and have a smoke when they're doing their shopping or have a break or whatever. It was a nice area. The public, in consultation, I think about 67% or something, were like, we don't want these trees cut down. And they just ignore it. They fluffed the figures. And then in the middle of the night, after months and months of campaigning by Straw Plymouth, which stands for Save the Trees of Armada Way, they went in, fenced off the area, and cut them down. And it was 123 trees that were felled before Straw Plymouth managed to get a hand in and an injunction to prevent them from taking down any more. Now, the council, I said, oh, we're going to replace the trees. Well, you're going to replace them with decades-old mature trees? And the other issue is it's not just the trees. It's the fact that the council went against the wishes of the public. And when I've gone out on Twitter with this story and the interest has been immense, I've just blown it up because we was going to talk about, you know, the budget. Now we're talking about trees, which is great because I want to talk about this.
Me too.
I think it's important. I can't, the Guardian, the Daily Telegraph, the Daily Mail, the BBC, the Express, the Times, the Mirror, they are all Plymouth Live, as you've just quoted from. They are all over this story, and I have found that it's not just Plymouth. This has been happening up and down the country. Why are they cutting all the trees down? And everyone's going 5G. And I thought about this on a little walk yesterday afternoon, and I thought, 5G, is that just them being conspiratorial? And I thought about some of my basic physics. You need to get rid of the trees in order and have clear, open space for 5G because the transmission distance isn't very far. And unlike radio waves, a physical process of diffraction, which happens with electromagnetic radiation, the 5G, because it's higher energy, shorter wavelength radiation, doesn't diffract. Radio waves can go around corners, around buildings and things like that. 5G doesn't. It's direct line of sight communication. That's why we need all these masts everywhere. And any barriers that may get in a way of that signal will need to be removed, and trees in particular present a real problem to that type of electromagnetic radiation that's used, the microwave 5G. So it could be, I'm not saying it is, could be because they need to clear the area so they can stick their masts in and get everyone on the prison system.
That's definitely, I mean, I'm the same as you. You know, I'm trying to look at everything objectively now. Is it not? I certainly wouldn't rule that out. And based on basic physics, like you've explained, that's a very good reason why you would cut those trees down, because it blocks the signal. Now, here's the other aspect to it. Even if we're completely off the mark with that one, psychologically, okay, it's the words that were used were traumatized and in mourning. And we're talking about trees here. People develop very strong bonds with their environment, especially if they're born in an area, they grow up in an area, or as you've said, in the summertime, you're painting a picture, people gathering under those trees under the shade at lunchtime, having a sandwich, meeting their friends, having a smoke, maybe having a beer, whatever it happens to be. Good times. And now when you go down there, you're going to see this empty space replaced by these artificial bicycle racks. And it is, it's a mental attack. It's a mental attack. We lost the tree. We have some big mature trees down at the bottom of my garden. One of them blew down. Had to get it chopped up and taken away because it actually fell into the neighbor's garden. Thankfully, it didn't hit the house. But that thing left a big gap, and it's sad. And if the trees at the bottom of my garden were ever to be removed or die or had to be cut down, I can't even begin to tell you how gutted I would be, because they've been part of my life on and off for a very, very long time now. And I think it's not just maybe a physical thing. It stops people from hiding, stops them hiding from surveillance cameras, or stops the 5G. Psychologically, Darren, it messes people up. People are actually really grieved, including me. I even made a video about this last night. And you know, I've made a lot of videos on a lot of topics, but I never thought I'd ever be making one on bloody trees in Armada Way in Plymouth and actually genuinely being moved by it. But here I am. It's affecting me. How much more is it affecting the Plymouth residents?
Well, I mean, I think traumatized and some of the other words that have been used are a slight exaggeration, because there are, because this is supposed to be part of a regeneration project for the city center. And hey, my city center hasn't been regenerated for years, not since we put a ghastly shopping mall in. So it needs doing, but you didn't need to take the trees down. If you're just going to replace them anyway, you didn't need to take those trees down. There was a great deal of public opposition. Hence, they did it in the middle of the night. They've cited health and safety concerns. And that, you know, again, that might well be true. But there was something else. Another local resident who I speak, another Plymouthian who I speak to on Twitter, he sent me some messages. He said, these are just rumors, the unconfirmed reports. But he was like, no, this is true. There's a lot of conservatives who are standing in the local elections that are coming up in May. They are expecting almost certainly to get absolutely thrashed and lose their seats. And good, they deserve it. Uh-huh. So do the Labour politicians too, who provided no opposition to the removal of these trees. But they got budgets to spend. I'll just check my watch. Oh, it's the end of the financial year. So they wanted to get in place projects like the city regeneration in place before they lose their seats, because those projects will then be guaranteed the finance again for the following financial year. So it was also a political and financial decision that favored the projects and the departments within the local authority. And there was no care, no consideration given to the public. And I think that is the biggest gripe, not so much to, I mean, obviously the trees, losing them, terrible for people's mental health and stuff. Green is good for you. Also because the public were ignored. And I suspect, just looking at the fanfare in terms of, you know, Plymouth never makes the news unless it's really serious. Mm. And everybody is talking about these trees in the mainstream media. There are videos out there now with millions of views. Amazing for trees being cut down. I hope this story rumbles on. And I hope that there is some form of justice for the public and what they've done to our city centre, Rick.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you know, I'm looking at the chat here. Fox says Plymouth Centre needed those trees. It makes me sad and angry. And I take Darren's point as well that, you know, obviously the newspapers are going to use highly emotive terms like traumatised and mourning. And for everybody, no, like I said, I'm not traumatised. I'm not mourning, but I'm grieved to an extent. But some people, maybe some old folk who have literally been there since those trees were planted, maybe they are actually on the side of traumatised, and maybe they are actually shedding a tear because it's a very sad story. And Rob Hoyle asks the question. He says, well, what can the people of Plymouth do about it, Darren? Well, here's the thing, and this is part of the psychology of all of this. Number one, there was people, 67-68% of people said, we don't want this. So what? They went and did it anyway. They put the ring of steel up, they took the chainsaws in by night, they started lopping the trees down. Then an injunction is served, so they stop. But by that time, the damage is done. Now, is this not an example of what we're seeing on the wider field, that even if they change the chancellor, they change the tax, the furlough scheme's already been there. The banking have already printed their money. It doesn't matter if you stop them now, the damage has been done. It doesn't matter if you stop the vaccine rollout today, billions of people have already been medically assaulted by this and died and lost their immune systems or lost a leg or lost a family member. The damage is done. And there's an old adage, I'm sorry to say, that I am a very big believer in. It's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is to ask for permission, right? Uh-huh. So in other words, go ahead and do something, even if it's wrong. And if you get caught, you can say, I'm sorry. It's easier to get forgiven for that than it is to get permission to do it in the first place. Because Darren, if they'd have been waiting for permission, that injunction would have been served and no trees would have been cut down. Now they'll say, I'm sorry, we'll plant twice as many trees. It's for the common good. They'll want forgiveness because they were never going to get permission. Yeah. And that's, I think, a model that these scumbags have been following right across the board, shutting schools down, closing GP centres, places of worship, furlough schemes, sit at home, we'll look after you, everything. It's all been a case of, we'll ask you for forgiveness, but we won't get your permission. Is this not just another manifestation of it?
It's exactly, and that is, I think, at the core, the problem here. they were asked not to do something. They have done it. They're now going to go, oh, sorry, we didn't realize you were all going to be traumatized and call us murderers of the night. And then, oh, don't worry, we'll replace all those trees. And then 2 years down the line, none of the trees are replaced. Instead, we've got giant electromagnetic radiation emitting 5G towers in their place. Oh, and we've got some bike racks. And it's not just there. Those bike racks have appeared right across the city. They're an eyesore, and I haven't seen one bike in them yet. No. It's a travesty that all these politicians who made the decision, who have done the establishment good, the permanent establishment, they're going to lose all of them. Most of them are going to lose their seats in the May elections. And then the new politicians will come in and go, yeah, we'll change. We won't do that again. And then they will. Yeah. And it, like you said, it applies right across the board. Yep.
So sadly, Rob, even though what can be done about it, technically speaking, nothing can be done about it because the damage has already been done. They can plant more trees, yes, but it's going to take decades for them to grow up. And they can be charged maybe with breaking the law, but it's not going to bring the trees back. And I think that's the problem here. Even if justice is served and people are sacked or somebody's jailed or somebody's prosecuted for doing this, the trees are still lying to be chopped up, no doubt, for firewood to power the power stations because the wind and the solar isn't working out too good at the minute. And my old chum, Johnny Fisher from Lisburn, he posted about this, about that tree I was talking to you about earlier. He said, they say it's dead inside, but they'll probably just take it away and chop it up and use it for firewood. He posted that months ago. And this is happening in a lot of local districts and local council areas right across the UK. And I think that's why this story's resonating, Darren. Light bulbs are going off and people are saying, you know, I've noticed that. And it's right across the UK and Ireland. So, yeah, I think there's something more sinister behind all of this. But then maybe we would say that, wouldn't we, as we polish our Beko foil hats that sit on our snugly fitting heads. But it's all good. So, Darren, apologies we didn't get talking about the budget. But I think between us, this is more important for today. Yeah. We needed to get this off our chest, and maybe I think it's resonating with a lot of people out there as well. So talk tomorrow, all being well. That is the one and only Darren of Plymouth. He is well positioned to talk about this because he's walking those streets. Probably even after he gets off air today, he'll have a gander down there in Armada Way and maybe give us an update. Give that an update when we get back online tomorrow. So, listeners, we have Greg Mabry, who is imminently going to be descending into TNT Towers. We'll be talking with him just after the short break here. Don't go away. This is TNT Radio.
For Roy Morich on TNT Radio.
Speaking of Mexico, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene has come out today and said, I'm proud to co-sponsor Dan Crenshaw's legislation to declare war on the Mexican cartels. We must authorize the use of military force to eliminate the thugs who are smuggling drugs and illegal aliens across our southern border, leading to crime and murder of Americans, while cartel members wait for their fate to be sealed by our great military. We will put a hit on their bank accounts by sanctioning any government that supports or allows cartels to operate. Yada, yada. There's war going on that affects every single American, but it's not in Ukraine or the Middle East. It's on our southern border. And what concerns me is when she says, while cartel members wait for their fate to be sealed by our great military. Yeah, that's frightening because this is like uncharted territory where we're headed. U.S. Special Forces heading into Mexico. I mean, Peter Zeihan said this is going to become Afghanistan. So, wow. Yeah. I suppose we were here, you know, like a century ago. So we just keep revisiting history on all fronts.
For Voye Morich on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is a message for the parents of young children in the United States. I am Dr. Tess Laurie from the World Council for Health. Please consider the danger of vaccinating your children and babies with the COVID-19 injections. They are not the same as traditional vaccines and are causing significant harm to children around the world. Your children have their whole lives ahead of them. They are not endangered by COVID at all. Please hear us when we say, for your children, it is much safer to wait. Thank you.
The Net Zero Con in action. Only those elites with private planes will be able to fly internally in France. There is no climate emergency. On air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, I'm really happy to be joined again by an old long-term stalwart of Locked and Loaded and now a fellow colleague here at TNT Radio, none other than Mr. Greg Mabry, who is beaming in from Western Australia. Greg is reinstated on Twitter. Yes, he was banned for a while for being naughty, but he's back again and you can connect with him at GJ Mabry, GJ Mabry, M-A-Y-B-U-R-Y on Twitter. And he also has a Substack page, which is gregmabry.substack.com. And on top of that, now the cherry on top of the old cake is he has a show on TNT Radio that goes out at the weekends, the No Fly Zone. We're coming up to that time of the year, Greg, when the daylight saving kicks in. Brisbane doesn't change. Everywhere else changes. The UK is going to change next weekend. What are your new times going to be when your daylight saving changes for your No Fly Zone show?
We're the same, Rick. We're the same as Brisbane. Daylight savings not a big thing in WA, hasn't been for a long time. So we run on the same time as Brisbane, fortunately.
Oh, so you don't have daylight saving in Western Australia, no?
No. So there's no change.
It's a real pain in the ass because twice a year we have to shift all our shows up. I start an hour later in the morning after the 20th Monday week in parts of America. In Arizona, they don't change, but the West and the East Coast change at different times. The UK changes, and there's all these bloody time zones. And even in Oz, I didn't know this, but South Australia is an odd place. It has a half-hour time differential. You know, normally time zones
go up in
increments of an hour, but they have to be awkward. They have to go up in 30-minute increments down in Adelaide way. Why is that? Why can't they just get with the program and use an hour like everybody else in Australia? Why do they have to be awkward?
Well, I probably shouldn't say too much here because I've got a lot of friends in South Australia. They just decided to go with daylight saving in sync, I guess, with Melbourne and Sydney. That's Victoria and New South Wales, of course. Brisbane and Western Australia, we're the odd ones out, I guess, there. I'm not sure about what Northern Territory or any of the other states, how they sort of lock in. I mean, that's part of the problem, just, you know, even for us here in Australia, just thinking, hang on, I've got to ring Tasmania. Are they on daylight saving? I've got to ring Brisbane. Are they on daylight saving? So everybody's got to kind of second guess, you know, when they're going to call another state because they're all out of whack. You know, not every state sings from the same hymn book on daylight saving. That's the bottom line, really.
Well, you know, it's like everything else. It sucks, but we have to deal with it. We have to adapt, and we have to. Well, it's kind of a first world problem. At the end of the day, there's more pressing issues at hand.
Absolutely.
Than DST. But it is something a lot of people would happily see abolished. And if you're in one of those places like Brisbane or Western that you don't have to keep putting your clocks forward and back and change your time scales, that's not a bad thing. But we move on anyway. So you're unaffected by the changes. A lot going on in Australia at the moment. I want to look at some of the things that are happening in Oz as well as on the wider geopolitical stage right now. Since the last time we spoke about a month ago, so much water, Greg, passes under the bridge. I'm looking at a story here that was actually put up by one of your fellow countrymen, a lovely chap by the name of David McBride, who I've been fortunate enough to speak to several times here on TNT. He's a whistleblower for the ADF. He is facing life in prison for whistleblowing. And if you want to follow him or you want to check him out, Greg, he might be somebody that I think you would have a lot of fun. In fact, he hosts a show at the weekend, I think, as well on TNT Radio. David McBride, he said, I'm facing life in prison. They're highlighting the fact that in 2007, this was a few days ago, war criminal Lindy England was released on parole after spending only 17 months in prison. She's a former USA soldier prosecuted for mistreatment of prisoners during the Abu Ghraib torture and abuse in Iraq. They mention Assange is currently in prison. Talking about Albanese's been to America, his name hasn't been mentioned. And David McBride is piping in, rightly so. He says, I'm facing life in prison for blowing the whistle, whereas somebody who was involved in actual torture of prisoners of war in Iraq only served 17 months. He said the same people that released Lindy England and didn't charge anyone above her are running my case and our defence minister. How is that deep reform going in Australia? Seems to be there's two-tier systems all over the place with regards to policing, with regards to media reporting, with regards to mandates and everything else. Why is this allowed to happen, Greg? You know, why is someone like David McBride, who simply shone a light on murder, okay, he's facing life in prison, and somebody who tortured a prisoner and was found guilty of it is released after 17 months? How can that be possible?
Oh, well, that's a big question. I think it's one of those questions, Rick, that none of us have any real answers to. All we can do is kind of respond and say, look, you know, again, it's another one of those great anomalies, one of those great contradictions. And I guess if you really want to take it to its, some kind of semblance of reality, it's one of those kind of, we have one rule for the elites, one rule for the rulers, and a completely different set of rules by which everybody else is supposed to play the game. It sounds trite, it sounds kind of, you know, a bit of a cliche to say it, but that's in fact how the world works these days. And certainly in the last 3 years, you know, I think this is what I'm hoping, because I try to be optimistic. I'm hoping that people will actually see those anomalies, will see those contradictions, will see those things playing out and start really asking those hard questions. Hang on a minute. This is not right. This is my reaction to the David McBride situation, the Lindy England thing, the comparison or contrast that you drew there, which was, you know, quite an appropriate one to draw. And I think we have to really keep drawing people's attention to these anomalies and these contradictions and these hypocrisies. Let's call them what they are. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think I'm that much different from people. I have a real distaste for hypocrisy. It really grates on me. It's always grated on me. It's part of the reason I do what I do. And the scenarios that you've just pointed out, Rick, really portray hypocrisy in the extreme. And again, to take it, I think they really are key things that we need to keep putting in front of people, and hopefully that people will react in that same way. Hang on, this is just simply not fair. Australians, and I don't know whether the Irish might have a similar phrase as well. We're very much descended from you lot over there in the Emerald Isle, but we have this phrase, you know, it's fair go. We like, everybody likes a fair go. Everybody has, and every country, every culture, I'm sure, has a similar kind of a mindset. If we can tap into that, this again, the scenario that you've just pointed out points very much to us not getting a fair go. And that's, I think, we've really got to tap into that sentiment. If we can tap into that sentiment, I think we'll really start getting people to sit up, take notice, and take some action.
I think you're right. And sadly, the people, especially that are not getting a fair go, are somebody like David McBride, who's simply highlighting and shining a light on the state-sanctioned murder that was carried out, blew the whistle on it. There's records of it. And as a result of that, I think, I'm not sure the exact charges, it might be treason, but he's looking at a 50-year-plus jail sentence if he's found guilty. And this has been hanging over his head now for a long time as well, the amount of psychological pressure that this is putting on him. Whether or not he's found guilty or not, he's already suffering from this on a psychological and a mental level. And he and I have discussed this. You know, I'm not talking about anything that we haven't discussed on air. I haven't discussed on air with him at the minute. It's taken a huge toll on the man. And in a way, is it not a warning shot fired across the bows of people like you and I that might be thinking about blowing the whistle and highlighting government overreach or government-sponsored murder or death? It's like, you could end up being put through the ringer too. You could end up with a potential 50-year jail sentence. They need scapegoats, Greg. And I think in Australia, David McBride, unfortunately, because he's an absolute diamond of a man, he is being made as a scapegoat, maybe as a warning to other people that would come forward and highlight the hypocrisy that makes you sick, that makes me sick also. We've got to take a real quick news break. If you have anything else to add to that, as soon as we come back, just in 1 minute, we can carry this on. There's some other stuff that I want to talk with you. So listeners, hopefully you're enjoying this conversation. Please don't go away. We'll be right back after the news here on TNT Radio.
Hey, we're getting back to the news. TNT Radio News.
What the f***? Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Fears of a new global financial crisis are growing after shares in the world's seventh largest investment bank plunged to historic lows on Wednesday. The International Atomic Energy Agency has sounded the alarm after it was found 2 tons of natural uranium had disappeared from a storage site in Libya. And US Republican Senator Lindsey Graham has come under fire after suggesting the US military should start blowing Russian fighter jets out of the sky.
For all the latest community events, rallies, marches, festivals, and fundraisers happening near you, visit the What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website at tntradio.live. Stay in touch on TNT Radio.
Okay, Greg, I think you were going to add something to that just before the news there. What's on your mind?
Look, just very quickly, I'm going to confess here that I haven't really taken a lot of notice of the David McBride situation. And David, if you're listening to this, my apologies. It's impossible to try and keep up with everything. I've certainly been vaguely aware of what's been going on. Perhaps my attention's been diverted elsewhere. But I will take you up, Rick, on your suggestion. And first of all, delve a little bit deeper into the David McBride thing. And secondly, consider having the gentleman on the show, because even though I'm not deeply familiar with the situation that he's gone through, only just sort of peripherally familiar with it, what he is going through, as you've described it, is the sort of thing that, again, smacks of hypocrisy, smacks of double standards. It smacks of situations that I've personally been in, although nothing quite as dire as or as threatening or as, as potentially sort of life-threatening, if you like, and even liberty-threatening as David is facing. And I would certainly, you've really sparked my interest in taking a little bit more notice of what's actually happening there for more reasons than just supporting him with what he's going through. It raises all of these other issues about how we allow our leaders and our power elites to basically get away with murder. If you and I were to do the same things just basically in this case, try and act in a moral or an ethical fashion, if that goes against the grain of the powers that be, if it goes against the official narratives, if it goes against somebody who's in power and they don't agree with you, look out for it. And, I've experienced that, as I said, on a much more parochial level. But, when the powers that be have you in their sights and they come after you, they will come down hard on you. And I've been through that experience. So I certainly identify with what David is going through and people like him. And I will take you up, Rick, on your suggestion and get in touch with David and perhaps have him on the show and talk a little bit more about his situation.
I think you two would communicate well together. I think you would bring a lot out of him. And he's no stranger to TNT. He was one of the very first people I ever spoke to live on air way back last January, February time. I spoke to him twice. And I really connected with the guy. I don't know why. Some people, you just connect with and you just really resonate with. So, yeah, if you're not familiar with his story, do a little bit of cursory research into that. You'll get a real good handle of it even after the show. And it's disturbing. The stuff that he highlighted, number one, is disturbing, extremely disturbing. And number two, what he's going through at the minute is equally bad for him on a personal level. So the same applies to our listeners, by the way. And I'll give him a little shout out on his Twitter page. Let me see if you follow him, if you want to follow him on Twitter. Let me see if I've still got this highlighted.
I can do that now because I'm back on.
Yeah, I think it's called Murdoch Cahill. So I just want to just shout this guy out here. Yeah, David McBride. So if on Twitter, he has a website as well, davidmcbride.com.au. So that's his website, davidmcbride.com.au. And his Twitter handle is at Murdoch, Murdoch, Cadell, C-A-D-L. Cadell. So at Murdoch Cadell. So he posts about his experiences, about his ongoing legal battles, and you know, highlighting this two-tier system and this hypocrisy within the whistleblower system or within the justice system in Australia. So that's just something for a little bit of background reading, if you want to do some on it, or for our listeners if they're interested in this whistleblowing culture.
I will do that, Rick, because you mentioned the whistleblowing thing. I had in mind of actually doing a series of shows with whistleblowers, and David would be an ideal person to even start that series. I've got two or three other people lined up down the track, but certainly I want to look into the whole whistleblowing thing because I, as I said, at a more parochial level, I was a whistleblower for a major government department here in Western Australia, and I got the rough end of the pineapple on that one, I can assure you there. But again, you know, I got off light, you know, compared to some people who are out there in a bigger environment, a more dangerous and a more threatening environment, such as, you know, you would be in these situations. But look, I do know that the powers that be, when you cross them, they come after you with everything that they've got. And
they do.
You know,
and not just jail, but a lot of people have been offed. A lot of people have been disappeared. A lot of people have died under mysterious circumstances. I mean, like, if you're a friend, in inverted commas, of the Clintons, for example, the amount of people that have appeared on the Clintons. You talk about a Christmas card list. They have a hit list, I believe, and they're slowly working their way through it, Xing people off. I don't know how many people are left on their list, but it's a lot thinner than it was. That certain people have, in your words, have got the rough end of the Clinton pineapple over the last few decades, that's for sure, and I'm sure there are more people to follow. Moving on from that a little bit, but keeping in the vein of hypocrisy, I noticed an article this morning that caught my eye in the Australian press. It's on the Australian Guardian, actually, and the headline reads, "Pretentious, hyperbolic, and irresponsible. What was behind Nine Newspapers' Red Alert series?" Now, without reading the article, that was the headline. I thought it must be to do with fear porn, to do with COVID, about amping up the deaths, about Red Alert, we're all going to die, it's a deadly pandemic. I thought that's what it was in reference to, but it's not. Experts have questioned whether the Sydney Morning Herald and Age's alarming series was inspired by an attempt to undermine the stabilization of Australians' relationship with China. So it's got nothing to do with the nonsense that's been printed by these rags over the last few years to do with vaccines, vaccine passports, vaccine mandates, COVID deaths, death fear porn with that, and then completely ignoring the aftermath of people succumbing to the medical assaults through the injections that they had. But what they said, it was one of the most alarming front page stories in the nation's history. Last week, the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age spliced the first episode in a three-part series with the headline, "Australia faces the threat of war with China within 3 years, and we are simply not ready for it." So there, the Guardian are saying that another newspaper spreading the worst disaster headlines in the nation's history in relation to a possible war with China in 3 years. Are they forgetting what they've been printing almost on a daily basis for the last 3 years straight, which is the mis and disinformation concerning the alleged COVID virus and the vaccine in inverted commas? Are they forgetting about that? Are they having selective amnesia here or what?
God, that's a good question. Perhaps selective amnesia. I mean, anything to do with mainstream media, let's face it, they could never be accused of being consistent in their reporting, regardless of whether it's talking about COVID or whether it's talking about our relationship with China or whether it's talking about inflation or some other issue, whatever it is. You just simply cannot trust these people. And it's not just in terms of what they say. It's what they say 1 week and what they will say next week. And unless you actually are a media monitor, somebody that spends a lot of time, you know, reading mainstream newspapers or watching and listening to mainstream television reports, which I don't, I kind of, you know, I don't have the time, Rick, you know, to do that. I don't think too many do. There is an argument, of course, for, you know, keeping an eye on what the mainstream media is saying, and you know, and all that sort of thing. It, and I, you know, I possibly should be doing that a little bit more to get that kind of comparison and contrast. And you know, there's a lot you can actually learn from, I guess, you know, listening to what's actually happening in the mainstream. But my experience has taught me in the past that really they just simply cannot be relied upon. For me, it's a time thing. There's only 24 hours in a day, the last time I looked, and I've just got too many other things to look at, to explore, you know, to sit around and start making comparisons and contrasts between what the media is saying about, like in this case, China. I mean, the media likes to have a bet each way. It's always having a bet each way. You know, I mean, at one point, a few years back, you know, China was, you know, was our greatest trading partner. We had this wonderful relationship with China. And as a result of our relationship with America, you know, that has now sort of pivoted completely. And now China is the next enemy hiding behind the curtain, waiting to come out and attack us. You know, I don't see it like that, but of course the media is going to play along with that. And it, and of course with the those that are formulating policy here in Australia, there's a certain amount of self-fulfilling kind of, you know, prophecy happening here, you know, that everybody's sort of assuming that, yes, we're going to be at war with China, so the mainstream rags are going to report that and the television stations are going to kind of report this. Say, oh, there's this happening in the South China Sea and, you know, China's doing this, China's doing that. And again, it comes back down to creating this kind of this fear. Hang on, but China is now our big enemy. It's creating this scenario that, yes, war with China is inevitable and it's just a matter of time. And, you know, we see this just about in every aspect of our reporting. You know, the same thing with the relationship with Russia. It's you know, Russia's the Putin's the bad guy, and it's never anybody questioning exactly what it is that Putin's doing, that he's doing in response to provocations from the West. So, you know, you don't get this analysis that really delves into the whys and the wherefores of why certain people in certain countries are reacting, you know, particular ways. China and Russia are perfect examples of that.
Yeah, but this threat of war, you know, they like to keep things looming over our heads. You know, if it's not the pandemic that's just passed, it's what's coming next. Is it going to be bird flu? Is there going to be Armageddon? Is there going to be a nuclear war? Are we going to go to war with China or against China or with them? That's the question. Anything's possible these days, and they like to keep those things hanging over our heads. I want to look at the partnership. I've got to take a quick break, and I want to look at the partnership that Australia, the UK, and the US seem to be forging. I think this was initiated whenever Scott Morrison was still the Prime Minister. I can remember Joe Biden announcing that he was partnering up with Boris Johnson and that man from Australia. He didn't even know who Scott Morrison was, one of his partners in crime. I'll never forget that press conference. Yeah. He said, I just want to thank Boris Johnson and that man from Australia, which was ScoMo. I'll never forget that at the press conference. I want to look at that partnership and, you know, Australia's obsession with procuring submarines, to which one of the Chinese ministers allegedly has quipped, what are they buying them for? Is it for sightseeing, which would imply, is it was that a veiled swipe, or are they just junk that they're buying up there fit for nothing other than underwater tours for the Australian public? We'll look at that unholy trinity between the US, the UK, and Australia when we come back after these short ads here on TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather
with reality and perspective.
You ever wonder why we have a stairway to heaven and a highway to hell? I actually saw that the other day, and it seems like the stairway to heaven might be harder to go up than the highway to hell. Now, I'm not going to sit here and pass judgment on whether you believe in God or not. That's your business. However, if you're trying to turn the earth into a living hell, there is nothing like the climate change movement to do it. And, you know, I could actually sympathize with them if there was a risk benefit type situation, but there's not. Continued evidence of geothermal input, in other words, the bottom of the ocean, continues to gradually trickle out. And the more it trickles out, maybe like COVID, all of a sudden, wait a minute, what was going on here? We were told all this stuff by the experts. I have an article on CFAQ, you can Google it, and it's entitled, What is Going On Here? And the answer is, what these people are trying to do is create hell going on here. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog, meteorologist Joe Bastardi, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
A former federal election official called the $400 million plus that Mark Zuckerberg spent to finance the local elections was a carefully orchestrated attempt to influence the 2020 vote and recommended that all states ban private funding of election offices. Hans von Spakovsky, a former Federal Election Commission member, said the billionaire Facebook founder's donations to a pair of non-profits that provided funding to nearly 2,500 counties in 49 states violated fundamental principles of equal treatment of voters, since it may have led to unequal opportunities to vote in different areas of a state. This allowed the conversion of official government election offices into get-out-the-vote operations for one political party and to insert political operatives into election offices to influence and manipulate the outcome of the election.
The conversation continues.
Our public education system, which I am now renaming our public miseducation system.
On today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, Greg, we're touching on this partnership between the UK, the US, and Australia that's been in force for a little while now. They're in a little cozy club, it's like a little Facebook group almost that they have between themselves for who knows what. Australia's been buying up subs, I think, nuclear subs, talking about, well, they're secondhand and, you know, they're not in the best condition. But a lot of money's being spent on these subs. Where's Australia standing in terms of, you know, you're not known for acts of international aggression, pretty much, Australia. You know, that's a place people would have emigrated to if they lived in Europe for a better life down under, you know, sunshine and beach barbecues and, you know, Skippy the Kangaroo and, Paul Hogan show. You know, what's happened? Why are they buying nuclear subs now? Why, are they want to unleash hell on the world of Australia? Has the worm turned with the Australian people or what?
Well, yeah, if we look back at our history, Rick, you know, we became involved in the Boer War, became involved in the First World War, became involved in the Second World War, the Korean War, the Vietnam War. I can't think of any war offhand that Australia has not put its hand up for, whether we were subservient to the British Empire prior to the Second World War. And ever since then, of course, we've been far more subservient to the US. But, of course, the US and the UK are still very much a sort of a combined empire, really. People think that the British Empire is dead and dust. That's not true at all. They're very much, they might be the junior partner, but they're still very much in control of things internationally. And, of course, with Australia's traditional ties to Britain, and now you would actually say, after 60 or 70 years, we've had, you know, traditional ties to America. Whatever America does, whatever the British want, or the Anglo-American alliance, if you like, which we are part of, it was the original ANZUS alliance. And I can't really speak to the AUKUS, that's the Australian-UK-US alliance, this more recent alliance. I haven't really done the deep dive on the background and the history of this, so I've got to be careful here about waxing too much on this. But it would seem to me that the AUKUS, Rick, is really an extension of that tradition that we have had in supporting the British Empire, going back as far as the Boer War, even before we became a federation, which was in 1901, and going back to the First World War, Second World War, Vietnam War, Korean War, etc. So to me, there's really no change there. If there might be a bit of an evolution in terms of the relationship, but there's really no change. We're always going to support the Anglo-American alliance. So in that sense, you know, I don't really see a lot of difference. What was interesting is that, and I haven't watched yet, but I had a long conversation with a mate of mine last night who watched Paul Keating's press conference, the national press conference address that he gave yesterday. And he, of course, was a former Labor Prime Minister. And, of course, we have a Labor government in power at the moment. And he, and I can only go on secondhand information I've got from my friend, but apparently Keating, in his inimitable style, really ripped into this whole submarine contact and just said it was one of the worst decisions, I think, one of the worst decisions that any Australian government's ever made since we introduced conscription to force young people to go and fight in the Vietnam War. Now, I think that was, I'm paraphrasing here, but that was, you know, Keating's always been one for the big statement. But I would certainly agree with him that it's not a good decision based on my understanding of it. You know, why are we spending all of this money? And we've
surely been, there's more pressing. You know, I get that there has to be a defense budget. I get that, you know, you have to protect your air, your land and your sea wherever possible. I understand all that. But let's face it, there's a lot of pressure on budgets at the minute. There's a lot of pressure on economies at the minute. Interest rates in Australia are going up, up, up. Rents are going up, up, up. Unemployment is looming on the horizon. Mass unemployment's looming on the horizon. The price of living, inflation's going crazy as well. I would have thought, as an outsider looking in, my two pence worth is, does Australia need to be spending all that money, all that coin on submarines right now? Surely there's more pressing issues on the land rather than policing the great coral reef in a secondhand nuclear sub. Or am I just missing something here?
No, I think that's a point that's well made. Rick, the other thing too is to what extent, and again, I'm not a defence or a military analyst by any stretch of the imagination. I need to go on and research this a little bit more. But my feeling is that, or my question would be, to what extent is spending all of this money actually going to add value to our defence capabilities? That's my question. And I think most just ordinary people without any kind of military background or, you know, understanding of defence, you know, capabilities and defence policies and all this sort of thing, the big question is, what are we going to get for our money here? You know, are we actually going to enhance the defence capabilities of this country? That would be the only justification for spending this kind of money. And you're quite right. In the context of everything else that we could be and should be spending money on, honestly, I as I said, I haven't listened to Keating's speech, but he will. He's, whether you agree with the man or not, he'll have a very interesting take on it, and he will bring home the bacon on a number of these key questions, all of which he'll probably will be ignored by our current crop of politicians.
Yeah. You know, this whole business of mismanaging funds or, you know, bad budgetary planning, you know, other things in Australia are being highlighted. Westpac Bank have highlighted that, estimated that 400,000 immigrants arrived last year under the Albanese government, driving the Australian rental crisis and putting Australians on the street. Obviously, borders are being opened. Hundreds of thousands of people are being allowed into the country. Immigration. They're bringing people in from overseas, for example, to replace Australian police officers that lost their jobs because they wouldn't succumb to vaccine mandates. Again, I'm not an economist. I don't run the country, but just as a layman, as somebody who's, you know, connected to the grassroots of this world, I would have thought that with those kind of figures being bandied about by Westpac Bank, they're saying, look, this is a problem that's being exacerbated here by allowing more people to come into the country. Again, would the money from the nuclear subs at least not have been put to better use? Housing Australians or building low-cost rental accommodation for Australians to move into because they're absolutely being nobbled by rental prices. That's if they can even get a house at all. And I mean, like, it doesn't take a genius, Greg, to figure out where the real problems are in Australia right now. And like I said, this submarine business is just to highlight a point. They're happy to spaff billions away on these nuclear subs that'll trudge around on the sea floor if they're even used at all, while hundreds of thousands of people are piling in, taking jobs that the Australian government sacked Australians from because they wouldn't take a vaccine mandate. And now the rental prices being driven up by this. call me an old cynic, but it's almost like they're orchestrating chaos within Australia. They certainly don't seem to be acting in the best interests of the Australian people. And we've got 1 minute to go. Am I off the mark with this, or do you think they're out to nobble you people?
Totally on the mark, Rick. In fact, you would go one step further and you'd ask yourself, you know, these politicians, they look around and say, hey, we've got this problem, we've got this problem, we've got this problem. I know. How can we actually make the problem worse? Yeah. This is how these people think. They might not consciously think this way, but their actions and their policies play out in a way, look, these guys could not have stuffed it up more if they'd sat down and said, hey, how can we actually make, for example, the rental accommodation situation worse? Now, I've got friends and family who are seriously affected by this. So, you know, that's a very personal one. But, you know, it's hey, look, let's make it worse if we can, you know. I honestly think that's where we're at.
I think they're rubbing salt into the open wounds of Australia. That's my take on it. They're certainly not making life any better. I'd love to talk to you a little bit longer about this, but I can't. I'm going to be exited stage left in about 15 seconds time. Locked and Loaded is done for the day. Greg, massive thanks as always for you taking the time out of your evening to talk to me. Check out Greg's show at the weekend, The No Fly Zone with Greg Mabry. Follow him on Twitter. Check out his Substack, gregmabry.substack.com. Big salute to you, sir. Thank you to all you lovely listeners.
Thanks
to Esther in the studio. Yep, it's been a blast, and we'll stay in touch, Greg, and have a lovely evening. You people also have a lovely day. I'm out of here.